in mainly light and variable winds. Ray.
Sharon, thank you very much. Ray, Sharon, thanks.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, you want to get up early in the morning to be up to the speed of those news presenters. Ray, good afternoon. On this Thursday afternoon, how are you? 51551 for your text, or ray@rte.ie for your emails. We spoke to Adam Clayton on Tuesday, him being the bass player with U2. You might have heard of U2. And he is a mental health advocate. We were talking about the elephant in the room, which is a lovely initiative, the brainchild of Brent Pope. And they're selling beautiful painted 4 foot tall elephants to people. And as well as raising money, it's also raising awareness about mental health. And I was saying to Adam, and he was saying to me, that he's been talking about it, his own mental health, and advocating for better mental health services for 10 years now. And we've had a lot of chat in this country about it, and people have come out and shared their stories, which is brilliant. But when you read the Inspector of Mental Health Services report and you see how bad the CAM services is, that's mental health services for our young people in this country, you realise that the circle has not been completed. That yes, we are talking about it. Yes, people are more likely to seek help. The unfortunate thing is when they go seeking help, that sometimes, and it looks like a lot of the time, that help isn't there. So as well as talking about our mental health, we need to agitate for change. We need to talk to our local TDs and politicians and ask them, what are they doing to improve our mental health services? Because you can't be shaking the bushes and, you know, getting things out there if there aren't places for people to go when they decide to seek help. And that's hugely important. Anyway, we might talk to the Inspector of Mental Health Services down the road. Alan Clark tweets today. I love this. It's a sort of a, you know, a small little thing. And I wonder, is this a uniquely Irish thing? Someone handing you a parking ticket with time left out is one of the simplest and kindest acts. Never change, Ireland. It's a lovely thing. So you're there and you're leaving, and you signed up for, what, 2 hours on the meter, and you're leaving an hour, and then you see somebody coming in and you go, there you go, there's an hour left on that. It's a nice thing to do. It's a lovely thing to do. It's like when we were talking about lost and found yesterday, and somebody found €20 and they put up a sign and the person found it, and then later on they lost 50 and the person who they'd given the €20 back to found the 50, and there you go. It's yeah. What goes around comes around. What goes around comes around. And it's those little acts of kindness that give you faith in humanity. And there's a lot of rubbish going on out there and a lot of bad news. So we need to hold on to those little acts of kindness wherever you can. We're talking photographs today on the show. We'll be joined by photographer Gerry Andrews, and people from Limerick will know of Gerry's work. He's an amateur photographer, well, you know, in name, but his work is very much professional. He took loads of pictures of Limerick in the 1970s. Revealing a changing city, and we're going to be talking to Gerry about that. And Marty Morrissey is part of a programme that Gerry's a part of, and Liz Gillis is a historian, and she's going to be in as well. But there's an article in the paper today about holiday snaps, and I don't know if you've experienced this, and it's a sign of the times in which we live, and the preponderance of mobile phones and people taking selfies of themselves. But does this sound familiar? Loads of photos on your phone of teenagers shielding themselves from the lens, arms in front of faces, refusing to be a part of the family portrait. Yet, when they're in control, it's perfectly posed selfies all the way with the essential filter on it and all that sort of thing. And most of us are not that comfortable with getting our photographs taken. But if there are any teenagers listening out there, highly unlikely, please, If there's a family photo at a family occasion, get in there. It's good for posterity. It'll be in the family album. And in years to come, you will thank me for giving you that advice. Just get over yourself and get in the photo. There's a nice little thing. Get over yourself and get in the photo. It's like a direction. Get over yourself, get in the photo. Get over yourself, get in the photo. Yeah, it's a chant. This is sort of related as well. Again, a sign of the times we live in. They're given anti-ageism, right, anti-ageism classes in New York City schools. Lorraine Cortez Vasquez is the city's commissioner for aging, and she's challenging young people's assumptions that the elderly are cute, vulnerable and useless. She's stopping the use of offensive terms such as "you look good for your age," and most importantly, countering teenagers' views that older adults are scary. And where does that come from? Where does that trope come from? Mainly Disney. Think about it. All Cruella de Vil. Your one in Enchanted. What was her name? Queen Nerissa, played by Susan Sarandon, or Sarandon, whatever you're having yourself. So from a very early age, children are being dealt up this image of older people as being scary. I think it's hugely important that we value, and that this is, and whenever you start talking like this, there's a danger of sounding patronising, and I don't mean to in any way, shape or form. We're all heading that way. We're all heading that way. And we know that we accrue knowledge, wisdom, expertise, experience, all of those things as we go through life. And then we have them to share at the end. And that's the brilliant wealth that we have there. And we need to tap into that more. Anyway, I'm with Lorraine Cortez Vasquez. I don't know if you need an anti-aging class in school, but that's what's happening in New York. We're usually 20 years behind anything that happens in the States. And speaking of older people, we watched at home Live to 100, Secrets of the Blue Zones. Fascinated by this, and most people are. How do you increase your longevity? And there's a guy called Dan Buettner. Himself and his brother have been working on blue zones, I think, for 20 years now. There are 5 blue zones in the world. And in these locations, there's the biggest concentration of centenarians. So more people live to 100 than anywhere else on the planet. So, as you would expect, people are fascinated and they go and they study. And this is a lovely Netflix documentary. Dan Buettner is back. Last night we looked at him in Okinawa, which is one of the southerlymost islands, or maybe it's a collection of islands in Japan. And they have a high concentration of people who live to 100. And he's trying to tap into why this happens. Is it the food? Is it the exercise? Is it the climate? What is it? And it's a great exploration. And along the way, in a sort of a gentle way, as opposed to telling you prescriptively what to do, you get hints as to why it is. For example, and I've read an awful lot of this over the years, I never got this before, they all do a little bit of gardening. A little bit of gardening, not a lot, but as a result, you're seeing, and they didn't even point this out, you're seeing a 100-year-old woman weed her garden. And she is touching her toes. She's not bending her knees. She's bending over to pick up the weeds. And that's, you know, so it's not going to the gym, but it's gentle exercise. It's regular. It's enjoyable. It's purposeful. All of those things. And then there's the food. And then there's the connection. And there's loads more. Anyway, the good news is we're speaking to Dan Buettner tomorrow. And I can direct you towards that. Live to 100, Secrets of the Blue Zones on Netflix now. The first one's only a half an hour, so if you want to do your homework, you can watch that, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow. I think the second one's on Sardinia, which is in the news today. Sardinia is, because a Frenchman was caught with 41 kilograms of stones and pebbles from a Sardinian beach in the boot of his car. What was he going to do with them? He obviously had a garden feature that he was going to make more ornate with pebbles and stones from Sardinia. I can see him now, out of a summer's evening, with his mates, sipping on a rosé. And they're going, oh, I love that, yeah, nice, yeah. Yeah, they're from Sardinia, they're from Sardinia. Not now, they're not. No, they're not. He was caught. He risks a fine of €3,000. So they were found in the boot, 41 kilograms, which is 6.5 stone, which is about the weight of a 10-year-old boy. I just looked that up. So yeah, because you need to know, you know, people don't know. So it's a, you know, a sort of slightly above average 10-year-old boy would weigh that. He had the pebbles and stones in his boot. But the sand and the stones and the pebbles are so prized in Sardinia that regional authorities passed a law in 2017 to prevent tourists like the Frenchman from taking it home with them. And as I say, you can be fined between 500 and €3,000. That's great. It's a part of everybody's life. Neighbours on the telly. Yeah. And you know, I've been at so many things and I don't know how it gets there, but inevitably people start singing Neighbours. I don't know why. And now they've gone and ruined it all. They've gone and ruined it all by saying something stupid like I love you. No, they've gone and ruined it all by changing the theme tune. I don't know how I feel about this, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but be prepared. If you've been watching Neighbours for years and years and years, and you've been singing the tune on a night out and singing along when it's on the telly, it has changed. John, that's the groom there in his version of Neighbours. That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? Like, I wouldn't even credit that to a wedding band. It's a wedding band with a member of the congregation, a member of the wedding party singing the Neighbours. What are they thinking of? I don't know. Anyway, 51551RAID.RTE.ie. Unfortunately, the pressure to be perfect in looks and physique is the reason young people will not appear in photographs. It's vanity and peer pressure. Get over yourself and get in the photo. That's the message. Yes.
You can get it if you really want.
Great Jimmy Cliff. And you can get it if you really want. Yes. The pizza challenge, we didn't talk about it yesterday because I thought you'd had enough of it, but it has continued. It has continued. And Sinead from Cove, who threw down the dough in the pizza challenge, the pizza-based challenge is back today. And we have an expert in, and I'll tell you how I got on and the hook and all the sort. Anyway, that's after 4 o'clock. And we've live music from Mick Flannery, which I'm really looking forward to. And we have that chat about photographs as well. I'd live with that new Neighbours theme tune, says somebody. Yeah, standards are low. Sorry. Watched the Blue Zones documentary last night. 3 episodes in. Amazing. And as a woman living with a husband with dementia, I can really see what being sedentary and completely inactive and isolated can do. Yeah. Like, policymakers around the world, and I'm talking about policymakers in Ireland, can learn an awful lot from these things. And we're at a disadvantage because of our climate. Because you'll notice this when you're on holidays in Spain or Portugal or in hotter climates, that of an evening, a lot of the older generation come out and gather and have the chats. And we know now more and more that connection is so important for everything. And it's part of living longer. And unfortunately, we don't get that much in this country, but we should create structures to allow older people to get that connection. We're usually 20 years behind what's happening in the States, Ray. That's a good thing. Look at the great advance warning we're getting. Avoid regression. Oh, I see. Right. Yeah, in some things. Other things, not so. Now, we're looking for 2 people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Great prize. It's a 2-night break for 2 people in the Hendrick in Smithfield. It's home to a vibrant bar and outdoor courtyard where you can enjoy breakfast each morning. And this is the unique part of the Hendrick. There are over 270 works of street art for guests to explore in the hotel. It's situated in Dublin 7 in Smithfield, so close to the very best that Dublin City has to offer. Shopping hotspots and loads of entertainment. And today's prize also includes visitor experience tickets to the new look Jemison Distillery Bow Street. HendrickDublin.ie. HendrickDublin.ie. It's a good prize. Yep. Coming up to do a bit of sightseeing or a bit of shopping, whatever you're having yourself. And our question today on this Thursday afternoon: according to the meteorological calendar, what season starts tomorrow? September 1st. According to the meteorological calendar, what season starts tomorrow? Is it autumn or winter? 0818715925. Does autumn or winter start tomorrow? 0818715925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Marty Morrissey and historian Liz Gillis uncover work of Ireland's photographers in a new TV series starting on RTE 1. It's called Marty's Big Picture Show. And it begins on Sunday, the 3rd of September, this Sunday, 7:30, 7:30, whatever you have on yourself, RT1. In the first episode, we get to see Limerick in the 70s, as pictured in the work of photographer Gerry Andrews. Gerry's images reveal a changing city, and he joins me now in studio, along with Marty Morrissey and Liz Gillis. So, Marty, Gerry, Liz, good afternoon.
Good
and
afternoon.
Welcome along. Great to see you.
We're having a bit of a party in Ray's kitchen, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, that's it. Gerry, congratulations on everything.
Thanks, Ray.
Because it's not just this half hour we're going to see on Sunday night, which is brilliant, because I watched it today, but this is a lifetime work for you, isn't it? A lifetime work.
It is, Ray, yeah. I suppose for me, photography started when I was a 19-year-old. And taking photographs in the milk market in Limerick, because I saw that as a vanishing Ireland, and I wanted to photograph it before it disappeared and was gone forever. And yeah, I enjoyed every minute of it, met some fantastic people. It's an amazing place. And I've had a love affair with the Limerick milk market all my life.
Yeah, yeah. And the photographs that we see on Sunday night are black and white. Liz, you're the research historian person. You did great work.
Thank you.
Marty, you just keep it all together like a big blob of glue.
Yes, also known as Evo Stick.
You do a very good job at Evo Sticking it all together.
So my role is very minor in comparison to these two beside me, yes.
So the starting point was your collection of photographs from the 70s, all black and white. And then this lovely, beautiful thing, Liz, that, you know, as it must have been a joy to do. Your job.
Yeah, oh, it's absolutely fabulous, because it's like we really were looking for needles in a haystack, because Gerry, the photographs were taken so long ago, and Gerry would have known some of the people but also didn't know the names of people. So we had to try and find these people.
Yes.
So thanks to social media, the call was put out and then people began to respond. And even watching that information coming in, is it them? Have we found them? Have we found them? Yeah. And then chasing that up. Brilliant.
Because these pictures are 50 years old. Yeah. So if you took a picture of a 7-year-old, they're now 57. I did the maths on that.
Well done.
He's an excellent student at school.
There you go. Thank you very much. And you had tried previously, Gerry, to find some of the people in your photographs.
Yeah, we put a search out, when I say we, the Limerick Leader put a search out when I had an exhibition in the Hunt Museum in 2012 to find the kid that was on the front cover of the book Shaped by History. And in spite of a detailed search, they didn't come up with anybody.
Right, because you were looking for, but you were looking for a boy.
I was looking for a boy.
And it turned out to be a girl, one of the Kylie sisters.
I was blown over when I heard that.
Yeah.
Because my memory was that it was a boy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fascinating to hear their backstory, which is very sad. And it's just remarkable that they were able to track down this kid 50 years after the event and her siblings.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
And you say their backstory is quite sad, and excuse the photographic reference, but they're... The programme has loads of light and shade, doesn't it?
Definitely.
It does, because there is this lovely thing of them seeing themselves when they were, what, 6, 7, 5?
Yeah.
And then it sort of, obviously, it triggers memories for them. And a lot of them
amazing
weren't nice.
Yeah. When we did meet them and when we did find them, they remember the photograph was taken kind of in a laneway, wasn't it, Jerry?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And they remember somebody taking their photograph and they looking at the photographer, not having a clue who it was. We now know it's Gerry.
Gerry, yeah.
And then they seeing the photograph for the very first time together. Yeah. And they turn out to be three sisters. And it's amazing what one photograph can lead in terms of the backstory of what all the chapters that unfold into almost a book. And each story that we do over the 6 weeks from starting on Sunday has a different story and emotional,
very
but
emotional.
Exciting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like a roller coaster.
Yeah. Because it's a window into the traveller community world, which was a bit different back then in the 70s. The girls tell us that their mother had 26 pregnancies.
Yeah.
26 pregnancies. 16 of them survived. And then they were talking about alcohol. They were talking about, you know, violence in the home and how they've emerged from all that.
Yeah. Very positive, because we did not know what we were going to hear. And at times it was very difficult for them to tell us, but for us to hear. And every time we'd leave a family, the two of us would just go, oh my God, that was just, you know, you're taking it all in, but you're delighted that in some aspects it gave closure to people as well, seeing that photograph. And that's the power of photography.
Yeah.
And thanks to Jerry, you know, they have this photograph, although it brings back sad memories, there was also happy memories that were brought up because those stories come back to them. It's amazing how quickly we forget.
And I remember there was one great story, which I don't think is in Sunday's programme now, but it'll come over the next couple of weeks, where they had a family had a photograph of their parents' wedding, which was just, I think, their mother and father getting into the car, not realising that the photo album was lost. Sorry, the photo album was lost. And we found the photo album. So they saw their mother's and father's wedding for the very first time together. Yeah. And they're all grown adults. Wow. That was emotional. And to be inside in somebody's home, to be in their kitchen, as we were in Jerry and Mary's kitchen, and grazing over all these beautiful photographs and saying, where are they now? What's happening?
Yeah,
it was
lovely.
Do you know what? It was fascinating.
Jerry, your studies are brilliant.
Thanks, Ray.
You can't take a picture of somebody without their permission. But some of them look as if, you know, they're so natural. You must have a way about you that gets them in you're relaxed.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't take a photograph surreptitiously.
Yeah.
I'd feel uncomfortable about that. I like to get to know the character, know the story of the person. To my mind, the story is as important as the photograph. So when you get to know the story of that person and you build up this trust, then taking the photograph is secondary, and they relax more, and you're not photographing a person, you're photographing an expression, you know, and it's an expression that'll actually tell their story. And that's the challenge in the kind of photography that I love doing.
So the milk market has changed since the 70s.
Yes.
So now it's nearly like a farmer's market type place, is it?
Yeah, it's a fantastic place.
Yeah. And back then?
Back then, it was a crumbling ruins, and it was going to close because it was quite obvious when you looked at the buildings. It had to close for health and safety purposes. But the people that frequented the market back then had direct links back to famine times. The market was built in 1852, and a lot of the people I photographed then, their grandmothers were born at the tail end of the famine. The photograph you have in front of you there, Ray, of old Moll, she was nearly 100 years of age when she died. Her mother was born at the end of the famine. And I couldn't get over the fact that one step away,
so close,
we
to
were back
history,
to famine
yeah.
times, yeah. you know, and yeah. it just blew my mind. And photographing people like that, as far as I was concerned, was just an amazing opportunity and a great privilege.
You've your own story to tell now, Jerry.
Have I?
Yeah, well, you do. Well, you tell it in the, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you came in with a white stick.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So go on. Tell us your story.
Well, I suppose I've 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which is a rare blood cancer. I had a stem cell transplant, and I was in remission for quite a few years. Did a lot of travel, was privileged to be able to see a lot of the world. And I had a reoccurrence of the cancer 2 years ago. And there's collateral damage. And for me, that collateral damage meant kidney failure, broken bones in my neck. So I was in a neck brace for 8 months. And my eyes were deprived of oxygen going to the blood vessels. And I'm visually impaired.
Right.
But, you know, and I had a Mickey Mouse heart attack in
just throw in for good measure.
In between. But the point, I suppose, Ray, I'm very lucky in that I'm living 20 minutes from St. Vincent's Hospital. I've got an amazing medical team supporting me. I've got an amazing wife.
Mary. And that story, yourself and Mary, is another story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you lost June 20 years ago.
Yeah, my first wife, June. She died in 2004. And I thought my life would never be the same again. Mary lost her husband, Eamon, 20 years ago. And it so happened that Eamon was a friend of mine. And we got together and we married 5 years ago.
Ah.
And how lucky am I to share my life with two amazing women.
Oh. Yeah.
So I don't see myself as being unfortunate. I think I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
Do you ever take a picture of yourself?
Me? Yeah.
We did, actually, didn't we?
Marty knows about them. They're called selfies.
We'll do one now.
No, there's the thing. I like being on the other side of the camera.
Yeah.
We took a picture. We were filming Liz doing the research at one stage and in the library. And it was just beautiful. I must say, I thought it was beautifully lit. And we Mary came in with a picture with Liz and myself, but we insisted on Jerry here. Well, by God, we had to drag him into the photograph. And can I just pass one other little comment?
Yeah,
because Liz and I have been very lucky to get to know Jerry and Mary, and their love story is as important as any TV show. And for that there is an amazing welcome when you come into their home. And it is just, you know, it reinforces your belief in love, and that 'tis there, and very lucky to know the two of them.
Beautiful thing. Liz, photographs. I'm fascinated by old photographs. I did something with the Lawrence collection years ago before I joined RTE. You know, that was taken at the, wasn't it? Was he a priest or something like that, Lawrence, the Lawrence collection? He went around the country taking pictures of all the towns. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't, so no, I'm going to have to look that up now.
Right.
The Lawrence collection. Put me on the spot there.
That's a marvellous collection.
Isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely incredible, Liz. You have to.
And I will.
You get inside in a national photographic.
He did an awful lot of places, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. All over the country.
And local libraries would have the Lawrence collection for their local area.
But the National Photographic Archive in Temple Bar.
Right.
They're fabulous.
They've got it all on file.
Yeah, amazing.
And brilliant.
But my question is about how we take photographs now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you, Jerry, you probably have an opinion on this as well. That, you know, no, but like, we don't print them off.
No.
They're going to be lost in the cloud somewhere.
And
gone.
I don't even think we look at the photographs that we take when we're taking them, because it's so instant now that you just whip out the phone and bum, 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 and it's taken and that's it. And you go, yeah, OK, forget about it. But whereas the whole process, even 20 years ago, I remember the excitement of, you know, in college and you're taking the photographs of a night out or something, and then you're waiting to go down to the chemist and get all developed. Yeah. And then you would actually, you know, make an event of looking at the photographs. And I still have those photo albums. I think that's what we're missing today. Mm-hmm. We take them, but do we actually look at them? I don't think we do. And thankfully, we had people like Jerry, like the photographers that we met, who loved our communities, who were jobbing photographers, that captured those moments in time, because that's an Ireland that is gone. But it's such an important Ireland, and we need to remember that Ireland, because it's not too long ago.
Yeah.
But yet people, without seeing those photographs, might not believe that it was like that.
And Jerry, I think there are probably hidden, untapped collections all over the country. You know, local photographers in a shop, but you know, and he'll have all the communion photographs and the confirmation ones and all that. But he or she will have other stuff as well, and we haven't tapped into that.
No,
yet. You know, so there's
and there's something magical, as you're making the point, Ray, of holding a photograph in your hand, like what you have in front of your Jerry's, and to look at them and to appreciate his. And his talent.
Yeah.
And you say, oh gosh. And the more you look at those pictures, the more you see things that you wouldn't see on your phone.
Yeah, and we had it ourselves, that we were looking at the photographs initially And then we'd go back to them and look. And then something, you'd notice something the second or third time that you looked at it that you didn't see the first time. I spotted one of my neighbours, for God's sake.
Did you?
Three, 4 times after looking.
Right.
The roar's on me. But yeah.
So it's Sunday night. I'm holding up this picture of three firemen.
Yes.
And people of a certain age will remember when a department store in Limerick burnt down.
Yeah, Newsom's. Yeah.
Newsom's.
Yes.
Did you know these three
guys? I knew the chap in the middle, Jimmy Connors.
Yeah.
And talk about health and safety. I asked Jimmy.
No such thing.
Any chance of getting up on the roof, Jimmy, you know, so as I can take photographs of the fire, you know.
Oh, God.
So he said, yeah, follow me up the ladder, you know. So, yeah, so anyway, I took photographs and then Jimmy said, very calm, he said, I think we better move. I think the roof is going to cave in. And we no sooner got to the ground and the entire roof caved in. So,
two of the lads are still alive and you meet up with them.
Yeah. But that was a devastating fire for Limerick. But talk about, you know, these guys, what they did, how they did it is just incredible, you know.
I was saying that you're an amateur, but you're professional in everything but name.
Well, I always made a conscious decision to keep photography separate from career.
Right.
Because I wanted to do...
But your career was related to photography.
No, I was in the printing industry.
Yeah, well...
Ah, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
So an outsider looking in.
Okay, all right.
A photograph, what do you do with it? You print it, yeah.
Yeah. No, I was, and there were, for many years, while I was building career and building a business in Dublin, indeed, I didn't even possess a camera.
Right.
Because it was a case of concentrating on building the business, building the career. And then when June died, there was no point in having the business as far as I was concerned anymore, and my heart wasn't in it. And my son got me a camera, and that got me back in the game.
Hmm. You can go to jerryandrews.ie, is it, Jerry, or .com?
You're putting me
in
the spot
website?
Now,
yeah.
Right?
It's your website, Jerry.
I'll ring Mary, Jerry. I'll ring her.
Do that, yeah. She's having a clue.
Yeah, I'm told it's .com.
Oh, very good.
Jerryandrews.com.
Thanks, Ray.
So you can see some of the photographs from the milk market, but you also see Jerry on his travels. You say Namibia is your favourite place to photograph.
Absolutely.
They look like paintings to me. They don't look like photographs, Jerry.
It's that kind of an environment, Ray. It's in the middle of no place. I mean, you're talking about being dropped in the middle of a desert. And you've got this diamond town, which is abandoned, and it's been reclaimed. Colman's Kop, it's called. It's been reclaimed by the desert. So you've got a marriage of, you know, buildings that are decaying, and the desert.
Nature coming back at it.
Yeah, and that's one element of it. And the other place is Death Valley, and it's a natural basin, and the trees within it have been deprived of water for centuries because it's surrounded by the tallest sand dunes in the world, Sousa's Flay. So these trees are just black.
Right.
And when the sun is setting, and if you get the angles right, you're silhouetting it against the vibrance of that sand dune,
and that's why it looks like
it looks like a painting. Yeah, but it's about timing, you know.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. It's not just arriving there with your camera.
But God has to help as well, you know.
I think we've established you've an eye, Jerry. I think we're all in agreement there.
Past tense, Ray.
Yeah, and a sense of humour.
I'll tell you, Ray. I'll wreck people's heads when I stand with a white stick and whip out a camera.
That's in series two.
That'd
be the challenge.
Please say hello to Jerry, an old friend of mine, an absolute gentleman. So proud to have his photographs hanging in my house. Suzanne in Portlaw, in County Waterford. There, yeah.
Oh, God, Suzanne.
Yeah. And then another Jerry, this Jerry in Ball's Bridge, love visiting the milk market in Limerick, has one of the best foodie coffee houses in Ireland, says that person. And please say hello to Liz. Our great uncle Peter Cassidy was one of the executed men in Kilmainham jail. And Liz, during her time there, was always so kind and helpful when dealing with relatives, and especially sensitive when explaining the history to the youngest member of our family, Sharon. And that's your area of speciality.
The revolution, yeah. Thank you, Sharon. I remember you well. But yeah, that was my area.
And so this is a nice distraction.
Well, I suppose it was taking me out of my comfort zone, but at the crux of everything, of all history, people make history. And whether it's political history, military history, social history, it is people's stories. And that's what we had the tremendous privilege to meet these people who lived in a different Ireland. And a lot hadn't got much, but my God, they had each other. And
Ray, it was a real challenge to get Liz to go beyond Clondalkin.
Do you know
when
from the Liberties?
The first day we went beyond Clondalkin, I said, okay, Liz, you know, we'll go back to Dublin. It's okay.
He got me out of Dublin.
Oh, there you go. Well done, Marty. He is persuasive. He's a charmer.
I'm amazed in this interview, Ray, because I've got to know Liz over the last 8 months. And not in one conversation, not in one text, has she failed to mention the Liberties. You're doing very well, Ray.
It is the centre of the universe, Marty.
So
should
I
know
believe,
that by
yes.
now.
So you told me.
Now, two more texts about Jerry, and then we let you go. Hello to Jerry from all at the Model School in Limerick.
Oh, Jerry.
And Jer says, I remember Jerry Andrews' amazing exhibition in the Hunt Museum. I was blown away by his photo of the old mall. That's that one there that I have in front of me here. I'm an artist, and I contacted Jerry at the time and asked if I could make a painting of the photo. I didn't know Jerry, but he called me and couldn't have been nicer and given me permission to use his photograph. The painting was later exhibited in the Hunt. I was very grateful to him. A true gent, says Jer. So there you go.
Thanks, Jer.
Jerry, I really loved meeting you. Marty,
good to meet you,
I meet you every so often. Lovely to meet you as well. So it's Marty.
Just a by the way there. Do you know what I'm saying? Marty's looking at you.
Marty's big picture show. It begins Sunday at 7:30 on RT1. And it's a joy. And as I say, light and shade. There's loads in it.
Thank you.
And it's a lovely programme. So well done to everybody. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks,
Ray.
Thank you. Great team involved. Thank you for your compliments, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Mick Flannery joins us in studio. How are you, Mick?
Good. How are you doing?
You were in Inishbofin last night.
I was.
I'm always envious of people who say they've returned from Inishbofin.
Well, I was only there for a short jaunt this time.
Yeah.
We arrived at 8 p.m. and something, did the gig, and then we left this morning at 8 a.m. Mm. Yeah.
How did the gig go?
That was lovely.
Yeah.
I always like going over there, or to Sharkin as well. It's a different world, you know. It's nice to see the people that decided to live that way.
Yeah, different atmosphere.
Yeah.
I was listening to your new album, Good Time Charlie. It's out on September 15th. And there's a couple of songs where you rock out, for want of a better term. I'm probably too old to use that term. And I was thinking of you as a stonemason, because that's where that's your origins, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I started off doing.
Yeah.
Was working with a stonemason in Blarney. Yeah.
And do you ever feel of an evening, you know, going out to the back and beating the bejesus out of a stone or a rock?
Well, I've been working on a few things around my house at the moment, so it's still part of my life.
Oh, is it? All right. Okay.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm very glad that I got it, that skill set, you know. Sometimes I think about going back to it, to be honest, because it's a simple life, you know. Just me and the stones hanging out.
And that the physicality about it is lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, I miss the physical tiredness of it.
Mm.
So you come in home in the evening and you're just genuinely ready to sleep. Yeah. It's very different to what I do with gigging. You know, you have an adrenaline rush after a gig that keeps you awake for a time afterwards, and you're... Your routine is kind of almost unsocial then, you know.
You got here today anyway. Thanks for that. You had to get up early to get the ferry. What are you going to... You're going to sing two songs from the new album, Young. Are you going to do... No,
this is
you're going to do Machine first.
Yeah.
When you're ready. Thanks, Mick.
Walk out back, I always found you hid inside an engine with your rag pushed into your back pocket. Hand me ratchet, pass me socket. I pretend to be taken by resistors and cables, filters, carburetors, and fuel injection ratios. That's when you were happy, elbow on the panel, smiling out the window, listening to the gravel. Ooh, ooh, ooh. She tells me like I need reminding, things round here been slowly dying. I run out to my haven, getting away from the fuss and fighting. Don't come around here complaining about surface conversation, struggling with emotion and bad communication. That's when you were happy, elbow on the panel, smiling out the window, listening to the gravel. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You're listening, but do you hear the machine? You're listening, but do you hear the machine? All that talk of global warming, electric is the future coming. They're going to outlaw V8 engine, carburetor, fuel injection, and you won't understand them, and they'll leave you behind. Now you could understand me, but you would have to try. That's when you were happy, elbow on the panel, smiling out the window, listening to the gravel. That's when you were happy, elbow on the panel, smiling out the window, listening to the gravel. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You're listening, but do you hear the machine? You're listening, but do you hear the machine?
Nice. More than nice. We had a school teacher who, if you use nice in an essay, he'd bring you up in front of the class and make a show of you. So I apologise for using that. It was way better than nice, Mick.
No, that's all right. That's all right. Nice
is fine. Nice is fine, yeah. I'm reading, you have notes attached to all the songs in your new album. And of that one, it's very insightful. The song suggests, you say, that in young people, aggression and opposition can be more rooted in internal individual struggles than a rational fight against a perceived wrong in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the following song.
Oh, is it? Sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, that's one you're coming up. Sorry. Yeah, that's one that's coming up. Sorry. Yes.
That's fine. Yeah.
But you still say it about a song.
Yes,
so, and it's still insightful. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I felt it in myself even. You know, or I especially feel it at moments of road rage. If you ever like get angry and you catch yourself and go, "What am I angry about?" Like, they just pulled in front of me and like, "What's the big deal?" Like, this must be there must be something else going on here. Yeah. Whatever I'm upset about that's boiling up, I have some type of what do you call it? It's some ill will towards the world or some feeling of like, that you've been hard done by or whatever it might be, but it's certainly all about you.
Yes, you see, and that makes complete sense. Now, you sitting here in Studio 7 and all is calm. But in the heat of the moment...
Yeah, you are completely righteous. And you should get out of your car and beat this human to death.
No, you shouldn't. No, you shouldn't. But what you should do is, and you know this, is check in with yourself, shouldn't you? When you feel that rage boiling... That you check in with yourself and you go, this isn't about that person, this is about me. And you can see that with youth as well, that you know, they're trying to find their way in the world, as we all did, and that they may find vent in other things when really they should be trying to sort themselves out.
Yeah, the two things are kind of, you know, in competition with each other all the time. And I don't know, like once I've always kind of felt that once I could feel at peace to some degree with myself, then I was much more useful to other people. and not just an angry like spout of, yeah. of vitriol or what it might be.
Now, I'll get this right this time. Morning Rain, which you're not singing, but is on the album. and in your notes about it, you were sort of worried that it was too chirpy, Mick. Come on.
I said it to the guys in the band that I like, what do you think about this? Like, is this actually a song or is it just, what is it? And they kind of coaxed me into thinking that it was okay.
Right, okay.
It's just a kind of a simple love song. Like, it's not.
I like it. I love it. And the piano at the beginning is very rainy. You know what I mean? I'm sort of there. and I like a bit of rain. I saw Mick for the first time in Collins Barracks last week. Fantastic concert. Absolutely love Mick. He's some talent. His show in Collins Barracks was amazing. That's Laura, his biggest fan from Cork. And would you ask Mick if he plans to work with Susan O'Neill again? They're amazing together. Listened to In the Game all the time. And Chain Reaction is one of my favourite songs, Irish songs from recent times. So, yeah. So I'm asking that question as well.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, Susan was at the gig at Collins Barracks. Yeah, that album, I was really happy with how that all went, and I really enjoyed the gigs because I wasn't full focus for the whole thing.
You're not comfortable with that.
Well, I found myself enjoying the gigs a lot more because I was in the band.
Yeah.
And I was able to kind of watch for a little moments of it and not be kind of remembering lyrics or kind of think about what I'm going to say to the audience during the next break between songs. Like. Like, just nervous wreck.
Like you're a danger to yourself because but you are right from the start. The first time I met you, you know, this has been the case, and you've lightened up a little bit. But then, what was the expression there, the Fianna Fáil one? A lot done, a lot more to do.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, no, I am completely joking with you because we've had great chats over the years, not on air at various things. Then you were at that London thing, weren't you? In the London Centre, the Irish Centre in London, you performed at that. It was Amy Winehouse's dad who organised it. Yes, you did.
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah.
That was a while ago.
That was a good while ago. Now, you're all over the place. The album is Good Time Charlie. It's coming out 15th of September. And you can go to mickflannery.com for tour dates. But I can say that from September the 7th, which is next week, Safe Harbour Festival in Cork, Dolan's Warehouse, the 15th of September. That's a celebrate, I suppose. You'll be celebrating the release of the album. And then October right through to December, Spirit Store, I'm seeing, Hawkswell Theatre, the Barras, INEC Killarney, that's a big one, October 28th, Roisin Dubh then in December, at the end of the year, two dates there, mickflannery.com. And you're going to sing now.
Young.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Right,
no, thank you.
Adolescent, struggle with the thought of being useless, wander through the fog, through the forest. Happen on a creature in the dark, and the beast is hungry. Figure this one, do that little tough boy look with your jaw. Put a little competent in your walk. No, don't look back, keep your head up, breathe, and look it in the eye. Young and ready, young will testify into the night. Come get me all about you. Every shred of pain felt again, you mock me. Altruist, everything from comrade to populist, all of it beginning in a mystery. Seeing through the eye of a needle and thinking, make thinking, so where am I though? Do that little rat race dance on the poor. Do that little tough boy look with your jaw. What's your God's name? What's your end game? Why won't you look me in the eye? Young and ready, young will testify into the night. Come get me all about you. Every shred of pain felt again. You mock me. You, the animal. You, the animal. Atrophy, knowing that the end would come for everything. Happen on the creature in the forest. One last tough boy look with your jaw. Lift it up, show your throat to the claw. Feel your heartbeat, breathe, and look it in the eye. Young and ready, young will testify into the night. Come get me all about you. Every shred of pain felt again. You mark me young and ready. Young will testify into the night. Come get me all about you. Every shred of pain felt again. You mark me.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mick.
Thank you very much.
Good Time Charlie, September 15th, and all over the country, mickflannery.com. Ray, love Mick Flannery, from a super fan in the Banner County. Thanks, Mick. Mind yourself. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Tánuach la fáil nap, RTE News.
Grandma, good morning. Thank you very much. And a couple of texts from the last hour that we didn't get to. Listening to those comments on age, nothing new. The portrayal of age in The Simpsons, in the old iconic Mr. Burns, and of course Homer's dad, who falls asleep and dribbles at the drop of a hat. I'm 62. I grew up with this, says Martin. And I completely agree with when you say get into the photo. Years ago on a night out, I would always have brought my camera. My friends used to always complain and tell me to put it away. However, as they look back on these photos now, they're delighted that I had the camera with me to save those precious memories. That's Gráinne in Cork. And a month ago, after a long day's work in Castle Island, I arrived at the big car park in Killarney. It was packed at 7 o'clock in the evening. I spotted a family loading into a UK Reg car, so I stopped. The driver got out and asked if I was going to park when he left, and I said yes. He then handed me a ticket, paid up until 10 a.m. the next morning. Ka-ching! I was booked into a hotel across the road with no parking. Humanity at its best, says Mick. There you go. Now, we've two quizzes standing by, ready to play the Who Done It quiz. One of them will win a prize, and it's a two-night stay for two people in the Hendrick Hotel in Smithfield in Dublin. It's Ireland's first street art hotel. There are over 270 works of street art for guests to explore in the hotel, and it's there in Dublin 7, so perfect for exploring everything that Dublin City has to offer. HendrickDublin.ie. HendrickDublin.ie. John Skelly is in Cavan. Hello, John.
How are you, Ray? It's Sean, I'm sorry. I should have clarified with your producers.
Oh, God. Somebody will be fired, Sean.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sean, sorry about that.
Right.
Yeah. And you're in Cavan, is that correct?
I am, yeah.
And you're making preparations to start a Masters on Monday, is that correct? I'll have to fact check everything with you now.
No, that's all right. I'm starting a primary teaching Masters in Maynooth.
Ah, brilliant.
On Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your primary degree? That's primary thing, is it?
Well, my undergrad was in music. I graduated in 2020.
Oh, yeah, right, okay. And was it always going to be teaching?
No, I did a lot of like guitar tutoring, and I was head of a school for about 12 hours before the lockdowns hit and closed the school.
Oh, right, yeah.
But no, my sister is fully qualified. She helped me get out of a rough patch with some work, and I just really fell in love with the job, and now I'm starting a master's with it.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. And of course, the music will be a big plus, won't it?
Oh, it will, of course. I've been doing substitute work for 2 years now, and it's very valuable to be able to go into a school and take over a class with it for a few minutes.
With a guitar in hand. We've all seen the School of Rock. We know how it pans out, Sean.
Not quite there yet.
No, right. How has the summer been?
Oh, the summer's been fantastic. I'm just back from a trip from Italy. There, nice. I was on Lake Garda for a week.
Nice.
Doing an Erasmus Plus out there.
Did you have a pizza? Because we're going to be talking pizzas in a moment.
A pizza, yes, I had one. I had to get some Italians to teach me to say it. A capricciosa.
Right.
I don't remember what the ingredients on top of it were. It was very nice, though.
Capricciosa.
Capricciosa.
Right, okay. I'm sure our listeners will tell us what's on a capricciosa.
I'm sure there's listeners who can tell me how badly I pronounced it there.
Right. You're up against Richard Roach, who's in Wicklow. How are you doing, Richard?
Hello, Ray. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. You're working away in Chadwicks.
Yeah, I just finished, just sitting in the car here waiting to go home, you know.
Right, right. How many years have you been working there?
34 years. I'd just like to shout out to everybody in Chadwicks and Bray there. I know they're listening.
Yeah. You've seen big changes in DIY and what people come in and ask for.
Well, I'm in the heating department, so we've anything from a grand pack boiler, as you hear the ads on the radio up to the heat pumps nowadays, which is totally different technology, you know.
Of course, than when you started.
Indeed, yeah.
Sure, I was brought up in a house with no central heating.
Stop the lights. Yeah, we had no bath.
You had no bath, come on. We have to top them there. We had a bath, but we had to share it. Five of us on a Saturday evening. Now, top that one.
metal tub,
yeah. You're counting the day down the days to the holidays. When are you going?
Yeah, we're going Saturday. Myself and my wife are 30 years married on Monday.
Oh,
so
congratulations.
We're heading off to Spain, and our two young children are coming along, 22 and 25.
Yeah, not too young anymore. Yeah. So what's your wife's name?
Marguerite, she's here beside me in the car.
How are you, Marguerite? And do the two children still want to go on holidays with their parents?
Yeah, just on the occasion. This is probably the last one now, just that we're 30 years married on Monday, so
yeah,
we'll probably go for a nice meal and whatever when we're out there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Where in Spain are you going?
Mercia, down south near the Alicante.
All right, lovely, lovely. Right, so you know the deal. I'll give you the rules. Three questions each. I'll give you the category. And then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. And then whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw on points, we go to a tie-break question. Okay, good luck to you both, Sean and Richard. Here we go. Right, Sean. First category is music. Music. You studied it. What do you want to do?
I feel I would regret taking a hint on this one. I'll go with no hint.
Okay, so for 2 points, can you name this singer, group, band? Cheer up, sleepy Jean. Oh, what can it mean to a daydream believer and a homecoming
queen? The Monkees.
Well done! The Monkey, because I'm just because you're
a dream believer.
Yes, you don't get any extra points for that. That's from 1968. 2 points for you. Well done, Richard. It's music for you too. Do you want a clue?
No clue.
No clue. For 2 points. Who is this? I'm back in my Cooper. Goodbye, Bridget. She's by my Who's that?
The Beach Boys.
It is Good Vibrations from 1966. 2 points for you as well. Good start from you both. Thank you very much. Second question, Sean. The category is reality show personalities. Reality show personalities. Now, it's personalities. It's not contestants. Do you get me?
Not really, no. I'll go with a hint for this one.
So it's not contestants. They're not. It's not reality show contestants. It's personalities.
Put it down.
Sorry. Right. What will you do?
I'll go with no hint. Sure.
No hint. Okay. Can you name this reality show personality for 2 points? Here we go.
I mean, I always think if I'm going to put you in front of, you know, however many, 8, 9, 10, 11 million people,
don't put them into a pass.
Every week, you've got to really grab that opportunity, make the most of it. And because before that, people didn't know who you were.
Who's that?
Simon Cowell.
It is Simon Cowell. 2 points. Well done. Richard, to you. Reality show personalities. What do you want to do?
No clue, please.
No clue. For two, can you name this person?
In just a few minutes, we'll be meeting the brand spanking shiny new housemates hoping to emerge from that door in 13 weeks' time and get their filthy little hands on a cash prize of £100,000.
Davina McCall.
It is Davina McCall. Well done. 2 points. Right. Now, very close, very high scoring. 4 plays 4. Final category, Sean, famous actors. What do you want to do?
I don't know. Hint again.
No hint again. Okay.
Yep.
So can you name this famous actor for 2 points?
Pay attention because I do not want to have to fail you. You know what? Normal kids would have been stoked to slack off, but not you guys because you're not normal. You're special. And because I think you guys have the right attitude, I think it's time we started our new class project. It's called Rock Band.
That's Jack Black.
It is Jack
School
Black. You see, I'd usually know that that was coming up, but I didn't because I was very busy this morning.
That's
pure coincidence.
I'll choose to believe you with that one, right?
Thank you, Sean. Thank you very much. 2 points. You're a clean sheet. Well done. Richard, famous actors.
Oh, no clue, please.
Well, yeah, that's you have to. Really.
There's no choice, really.
Yeah. So this will bring us to a tie-break question. Good luck with this. Can you name this famous actor for 2 points?
Oh, I make it a point never to give references. A very old-fashioned idea to my mind. Now then, the qualifications. Item 1, a cheery disposition. I am never cross. Item 2, rosy cheeks. Obviously. Item 3, play games all sorts.
Julie Andrews.
It is, well done. Yes, as the nanny in Mary Poppins. She is Mary Poppins, obviously. And you get 2 points. So there you go. Well done to you both. 6-6, which takes us to a tie-break situation. I don't really like this, but it's the only way we can sort it out. We asked you a question before you went on air. I'm going to repeat it now for our listeners at home, and whoever's answer is closest to the correct answer is today's winner. Good luck to you both. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to walk from Tralee in County Kerry to Carrick on Shannon in County Leitrim? And we want your answer in hours and minutes. And your guess, Sean, was?
It was 17.
Hours, right.
Yeah, regretting that one.
Yeah, it's 245 kilometres. And your guess, Richard?
30.
The correct answer via the N69, which is important, is 50 hours. 50 hours. So, unfortunately, Sean, Richard is closest to the correct answer today. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup, which you can take with you to college. And lovely talking to you. And good luck with the Masters and everything that's new in Maynooth. Right, lovely talking to you.
Well done, Richard. Yeah.
See you, Sean. Bye now. Bye. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Right, Richard, well done.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. They're all shouting there with the Chadwicks here in Bray.
Well done. So that's well, I can say happy anniversary to you now.
Yourself and Marguerite
are coming up for a weekend in the Hendrick Hotel, hendrickdublin.ie. You can look up their website there and see what's in store for you. Enjoy Spain. Happy anniversary. Great talking to you. Well done.
Thanks.
See you, Richard. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Calvin Harris and Ragged Bowman Giant. Now, for those of you who haven't been listening this week, I've been on a bit of a mission. A mission to master the perfect homemade pizza base. I know. With all the important things going on in the world. You see, it happened last Friday. Tomorrow week, I mentioned casually that life's too short to buy or to make your own pizza bases. Why not just go into the supermarket and buy them? Sinead Morgan from Cove, who was on the line, was horrified. She said, you don't know what you're missing. You have to try and make your own pizza dough. And in there started the challenge. And I've tried. Hello, Sinead.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Yeah. So we were talking on Monday and then I did it on Monday night and I failed. We spoke on Tuesday. And then I tried it again. Just to let you know, we've Giuseppe Crupi, Italian chef and director of Pinocchio, who's an expert at making pizza dough and pizzas in studio with us. Say hello to Sinead.
Oh, hi, Sinead. How are you?
No, I'm very good. No pressure.
No pressure. Yeah, so you have a thing in your house where you make the dough on a Friday and it's pizza
on
night.
On Friday.
And it's a ritual. Yeah. It's a lovely thing.
It's a ritual, yeah. For the last maybe 4 or 5 years we've been doing it, mainly through COVID and before that as well. So every Friday night we have pizza. And I started making homemade dough about 3-4 years ago and everybody loves it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And I can't eat takeaway pizza.
She's a purist.
Brava.
Yeah, absolute pure. Make my own sauce. Yeah. Homemade.
All right.
They're absolutely beautiful. Have I converted you though? Did you make it again?
Here's the thing, right? I discovered I had this this thing in my press for years, and I didn't know it was called dough hook. So I used it for the first time the other night. So Sinead had suggested, Giuseppe, that I do it on the flat. So I created the volcano, put the liquid, the oily liquid in the crater in the middle, and then it broke the wall of the volcano. It was all over the kitchen floor, a mess. Nobody was happy.
But now you have a story. You have a story
because
to tell.
Yes, I have a story to tell. Yes.
And so, first of all, yes, I think Sinead is an inspiration because that's what should happen. You know, like people taking embracing new challenges and making food from scratch. Also because you know, like when Sinead you do it, then more people feel like doing it, and there isn't such a thing as the perfect pizza because the perfect pizza is the one that you like the most.
Giuseppe, pizza maker and philosopher.
That's me.
I like you. But see, it was his fault because he forgot to mix it with the fork, as I told him
that's
to.
That's me. She's referring to me.
To be honest,
that was his fault that it went everywhere. In my house, it doesn't go everywhere because I mix it with the fork,
a hook. I think you had too much of an ambitious plan asking Ray to start already without the bowl, okay? Let's start with a step before, because it is true that we do the crater and we put everything in the center. I tell you why it's very good if you do so. It's just that this way you can keep on adding the flour from the surrounding area, and you stop when you get the right texture. You don't even need to measure the flour, you know, because the dough will tell you when it's ready.
It's fine. I have a weighing scales.
I
don't mind measuring
all this to him.
Yeah, of course you did. And look, just because Giuseppe is Italian and he's a master pizza maker and he's sitting in front of me, I'm not listening to him more than I listen to you. I value your advice.
And you shouldn't. That's the spirit.
But here's the thing. So then I went back to basics then, and I got out the bowl and the dough hook and I put it all and I did it. I left the thing overnight to proof.
And it
doubled in size. I was very happy. And then I split it into three separate mounds. I measured it out. Yeah. Now, I think I made a mistake and I put them all together. I should have put them in separate bowls. Anyway, there you go. And last night I went about making pizza.
Very good.
Do you want to know how it got on?
Say it again?
Do you want to know how I got on?
Yes, obviously.
Okay. Right. Well, the first one was sort of trapezoid, rectangular in shape. It was definitely not a circle.
Keep it creative. It's fine.
It doesn't matter.
I'd
gone to a shop and bought a pizza shovel, I thought it was, but it's a pizza
paddle.
That's
commitment.
That's commitment, right.
very good.
And I went down to the local shop and this man claims it's the best pepperoni in the world. I don't know if it is. Anyway, so the first pizza was for my son who loves a pepperoni pizza.
Very nice.
Slice the thing, blah, blah, blah. So I have the pizza on the paddle. And it's a doughy thing, and it seems to be right. I put the cheese, the sauce, the pepperoni, and then I'm about to place it in the oven. What happens?
It doesn't leave the...
It does, but it leaves it and it folds onto itself.
Okay.
So there's pepperoni, cheese, dough all over the inside of the oven.
Very good.
What did I do wrongly there?
Well, first of all, you do need to have a bit of a practicality on it in the sense that you have to give a little...
This isn't television, so it's sort of in the wrist.
It's not in the wrist. The magic happens that you generally put a little bit of flour on the paddle before, so it doesn't stick.
Okay.
And even before putting in the oven, you do small movements to see if it's moving or if it's stuck.
Yes.
You don't try it on directly with a big movement and you shove it in. But you learn from mistakes.
You can buy pizza trays as well.
Yes.
You can buy pizza trays and I just use paper. Yeah.
You use paper. Right.
Yeah, you can put it on parchment if you want.
Oh, right.
There are even these circular ones that are already, so you just, you can even stretch the pizza within the circular tray and it's already there, so you don't have to do this movement, you know, like, even though yours is much more choreographic.
Of course. So, Tom, despite the fact that he'd had lunch late, he liked it.
Very good.
I went with our traditional pizza, which involves capers and olives and anchovies and all that sort of thing. Put it on it.
I like that.
Jenny was still reeling from the fact that I'd messed up her kitchen again, so I think it might have put her off the pizza. It affected her appetite.
Yeah, but this is a test for your relationship.
If she overcame that, she really loves you.
That's good. This can last.
Okay. And the other thing, of course, Sinead, you know this, that I changed days. Like poor Kate came out of the sitting room and she's going, is it Friday? And I go, no, it's Wednesday. And she goes, what's the story with pizza? You know?
Every day is a good pizza day.
Every day is a good pizza day, right? He has an answer for everything. This is brilliant. I love this. I love this man.
Love you too. Love you too. But
So here's the thing. The brilliant thing is I loved it.
Fantastic.
I loved it. I don't know if I'm going to do it every time. Kate loved it. Prefers it to the shop-bought one. Jenny's jury is still out on the pizza. I think practice makes pizza perfect.
Perfect. Also because you have to consider that when it comes to that, to be honest, there isn't really a recipe for the pizza. It doesn't exist. It's like you ask some Irish mother the recipe for the
stew.
Brown bread.
Or shortbread, yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because everybody's so familiar with that then they make their own pizza, you know. And part of the flavor that you enjoy so much about the pizza you made is all the efforts, you know, like all the time together you spent with your family, the laughter, you know, like the satisfaction of getting something that is edible. Exactly, you know, like, and that is what pizza gives you, you know, it's cheerful.
Okay, I tell you what I'm going to do, Sinead. I'm going to just what Giuseppe said there now, I'm going to record that and play it back to my wife.
Oh.
Yeah, that should work. It'll sound better coming from you, Giuseppe.
It's the accent.
Yeah, yeah. So
I think so. The Italian accent might do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sinead, can I just say to you, thank you very much for challenging me. Because I wouldn't have done it without your challenge. And it's something I'm going to return to.
Oh, you're more
I'm just going to make you jealous here now because Giuseppe has brought in. That's a margarita, is it, with basil leaves? And what else? What have you got?
It's a Pinocchio one.
Oh,
Sinead, you're more than welcome to come to our cookery class in Pinocchio, if you like. You know, like, so we can exchange tips if you want. You know, and the pizza.
I would love to.
Oh, please do. I mean it.
So Giuseppe Crupi, Italian chef and director of Pinocchio, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Now a famous Italian pizza maker and philosopher. Sinead Morgan, we will speak again. Thanks so much. Thank you, Sinead. Good fun.
Thank you.
Goodbye now. Bye. That's it from us. Cormac is on drive time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.